Concerning the Book That Is the Body of the Beloved by Gregory Orr. Okay, I'm not sure how well this is going to work. If we're in the same room reading poetry, you can say, "Oh, read that one again," or "Could you slow down a little bit?" And we could talk about them. "That one didn't work for me," or "Lord, I need to sit with that one for a while." But now I'm over here and you're over there, so we can't have that same rhythm of listening, of eating these together. But let's try. Let me know how it works for you. Before the poems, can I introduce you to Gregory Orr? He's famous, but I didn't know him until 3 years ago, and I've been reading him steadily ever since. He tries to write about it all, about our experience of it all, and his work blends grief and joy in an amazing way. And just something to know about where that's coming from. When he was 12 years old, he accidentally killed his brother in a hunting accident. And that's something his family was never really able to talk about. And soon after that, his mother died. And Orr says that he found in poetry the transformative power of language. That's how he talks about it. And then, right after college, he had a near-death experience as an activist in the civil rights movement when he was thrown in jail and beaten. And again, he turned to poems as a way to seek transformation. So he says this: "I believe in poetry as a way of surviving the emotional chaos, spiritual confusions, and traumatic events that come with being alive." So this book, Concerning the Book That Is the Body of the Beloved, what does he mean by the book or the body of the beloved? It can come across kind of mystical, but it's also very practical, and he doesn't really say directly what he means by it. The answer accumulates as the poems flow along. But in case it helps to have a clue, my sense is that the body of the beloved is all of life's experience, and the book is everything anyone ever expressed about their experience. Now, most of the poems in this book are less than one page long. I've chosen selections to read to you, leaving a brief pause between each poem. They don't have titles, so I'll simply say the page number. I've grouped them into 5 sections of about 10 minutes, give or take. Let's begin. Sixteen. What is life? When you first hear that question, it echoes in your skull as if someone shouted in an empty cave. The same answer each time: the resurrection of the body of the beloved, which is the world. Every poem different, but telling the same story. And we've been gathering them in a book since writing began, and before that as songs or poems people memorized and recited aloud when someone asked, "What is life?" I've known grief. I don't take it lightly. Know how it gnaws your bones hollow so you're afraid to stand up, afraid the lightest wind will knock you over, blow you away. But maybe the wind is supposed to blow right through you. Maybe you're a tree in winter and your poem translates that cold wind into song. 21. I want to go back to the beginning. We all do. I think hurt won't be there, but I'm wrong. Where the water bubbles up at the spring, isn't that a wound? 22. How easy to give up hope. How easy to draw death over you like a black cloak. Cover your face, your eyes. Stand there like a dead tree. I did that, claiming it was penance, claiming I was sorry I was alive after the beloved died. Who was I fooling? No one demanded I act that way, least of all the ones I loved, who longed to live again and could not unless I uttered their names, unless I told their stories, unless I felt on my own bones how much they loved the world. The river has a single song, which is itself. The tree has a song. The bird also. The heart knows all these songs and a million of its own. Neither the river nor the bird can write. The tree moves its branches against the sky all day as if it's thinking about inventing its own alphabet, but nothing comes of it. So it's still up to us. We're supposed to bring them into the book, make a place for them in our poems. 29. The world comes into the poem. The poem comes into the world. Reciprocity. It all comes down to that. As with lovers, when it's right, you can't say who is kissing whom. 32. If death, then grief, right? Well, yes, but also relief, release, and love that goes past death, that keeps the connection so many think death severs. And then, of course, there's joy, because what we're after is the fact of resurrection, that what the heart longs for, the poem accomplishes. Praise that lifts up the body of the beloved. That wasn't a grave, only a door that closed and now is open, opening into a poem. 34. Those dreams in which a phantom of the beloved appears, those are a true haunting, a trick of the mind to make you think she's lost, that he will never come again. You wake in the dark weeping. You hear the river outside your window, flowing to the sea. You think, who could read poems in this darkness? And all the time your sorrow is the poem of hope, and the beloved is there beside you. 35. Everything dies. Nothing dies. That's the story of the book. If the book were a bird, those two sentences would be its wings. Nothing dies. Everything dies. If the book were a fish, they would be its fins. But the book is the body of the beloved. Two hands, two feet, two eyes, lips to kiss. 36. Silence. Does silence make things vanish or confirm their disappearance? Is the beloved who has died buried more deeply by silence than by earth? Even closed and locked away, the book whispers about the beloved in dreams. Still, it's a whispering difficult to understand, impossible almost. But if we find the book and open it, if we find the poem that's trying to find us, the poem the beloved wrote and sent out on the long journey toward our heart. If we find that poem, it all makes sense, and the silence recedes before the beloved's quiet voice speaking to us. 38. The beloved has gone away. Always, this is the case. Each moment turns on its hinge and loss is there, loss announcing itself as an absence. But that's because we're looking backward, looking in the wrong direction, so desperately clinging to a last glimpse of the beloved, as if loss itself is what we loved. And all the time, the Beloved is coming toward us, is arriving out of the future, eager to greet us. XXXIX. Some of the poems are clear. Some are incomprehensible. Aspects of the Beloved. Sometimes he's plain as a pebble. Others, he's hidden in opacity like a tree's roots. It's not all lucid miracle. You knew that. Life itself was full of mystery. Why shouldn't the life after death be strange? 40. Tears and laughter, weighing them out one against the other, sobs and love sighs, trying to separate them, putting each in the scales. What a job! The book's no help. Clarification, catharsis, coherence. Every poem in the book aspires to these ideals, but to no avail. It's all there, but hopelessly jumbled and muddled, tossed in the same sack. You want to sort it out and come to some conclusion, and instead, you're tossed in too. 42. Lighten up, lighten up. Let go of the heaviness. Was it a poem from the book that so weighed you down? Impossible. Less than a feather, less than the seed a milkweed pod releases in the breeze. Lifted, it drifts out to settle in a field, with all that's inside it waiting to become root and tendril, to come alive. 43. Too many mysteries, too many emotions. Why don't we stop adding to the book? Why don't we let it rest in neglect for a few generations? Could we? Is it in our power? I've sat by and seen it expand without anyone opening its covers to add a page. I've seen it grow as if someone had merely thought a poem.